You are listening to an exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. I'm Jorge Fascinetti. Today, Dr. Lewis Blevins discusses acromegaly and cancer, and the findings of a recent study from Denmark published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Here's Dr. Blevins.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News, podcasting to you from Sausalito, California on this lovely, wonderful afternoon. I've been thinking about this podcast for some time. The topic is cancer incidence in patients with acromegaly. I was prompted to do it by a recent article, but the genesis of the podcast actually came from my experiences with several patients over my career and also especially recently who had cancer in the setting of also having had acromegaly. One of those patients was a lovely woman who was in her 30s and had pretty severe acromegaly that was refractory to therapy, but also had a very aggressive form of breast cancer that didn't respond to treatment, and she ultimately succumbed to her illness. She's about one of four or five people that I believe I've seen now who have a history of acromegaly and breast cancer at the same time. Another is a gentleman with colon cancer, presented in his 20s, believe it or not, with colon cancer and also had acromegaly. I've seen patients with other malignancies in the setting of acromegaly as well. And the topic comes up, as you know, growth hormone and IGF-1 are growth factors, so the topic comes up more often in patients who have growth hormone deficiency who wonder whether restoring growth hormone levels to normal with growth hormone might be at increased risk for cancer. And of course, the answer, I believe, is no. But certainly those patients who have chronic high levels of growth hormone and IGF-1 seem to be at an increased risk of cancer. And this latest article sort of covers that issue and has some real data that we can share with you and discuss if you'd like. So the title is Cancer Incidence in Patients with Acromegaly, a Cohort Study and Meta-Analysis of the Literature. And this comes from Dr. Dahl and others from Denmark, published in Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, Volume 103, pages 2182 to 2188, in the year 2018. Now in Denmark, they have a National Health Service program where they have basically data on everybody, whether you're a citizen born there or an immigrant. You get a registration number. And when you go to the doctor, information is collected about you and put into your medical chart. So it's really a great place to get epidemiological data. There are several countries like this throughout the world. If you really want to know what the incidence of cancer is in acromegaly, you want to get the data from a study, from a country such as that, where such a study can be performed. And basically, in between 1978 and 2010, they evaluated 529 cases of acromegaly and compared the cancer diagnosis and mortality against the national rates of people who didn't have acromegaly. And we're able to also then do a review of the literature and evaluate data that were robust enough to gain information about this cancer risk in acromegaly. So, interestingly, in their study, they found that if you got rid of cancer diagnoses within the first year because it was not sure which came first, the acromegaly or the cancer, even though we know people with acromegaly have had the disease on average for 7 years and many for 20, 25, 30 years, they got rid of the first year because they didn't want to sort of skew the results or have any bias there. So they were really interested in people with acromegaly who were followed after treatment who developed cancer during follow-up. I would argue that probably you shouldn't get rid of those first-year patients because those patients probably had cancer in association with their acromegaly as well. So there's a lot of statistics associated with this paper, and I want to try to simplify this for you. We can look at standardized incidence rates, comparisons to the normal population. We can look at the observed versus the expected. Outcomes can be evaluated in those with a disease and not a disease. So it's a complex issue to address. But they did it very nicely, I thought, and they looked at observed versus expected numbers according to what the rates were in the normal population and what they actually saw in patients with acromegaly. And for example, in their cohort of patients with acromegaly, they saw 81 patients had cancer. They expected 72 in the population if this were the normal population. So patients with acromegaly were found to have a higher incidence of having had cancer than the normal population. They saw 10 cases of colorectal cancer, so this is cancer in the colon, basically, where they expected 7. So the rate was 1.4 times the normal population. With regards to breast cancer, they saw 9 cases but expected 8, so the rate was 1.1 times the normal population. Interestingly, they saw less lung cancer than the normal population. Gastric cancer, they saw 4 cases and expected 1. So clearly that's higher than the normal rate. Prostate cancer, they saw 9 cases but expected 6. So that, again, is higher than the normal population. These data suggest that there is a cancer risk associated with having acromegaly. Interestingly, there were some studies published in the 1990s, and I believe the early 90s, that suggested patients who had prostate cancer and breast cancer had higher quartile IGF-1 levels. And what that means is that their IGF-1 levels were in the upper quarter of the normal range. That's what's called a cross-sectional analysis study. It doesn't prove cause and effect, but it's more of an association in that setting. But those data would suggest, if you look at these data, that indeed patients with acromegaly, higher risk of prostate cancer, breast cancer, they suggest that there is an association there with these growth factors and cancer development. Now, they did a meta-analysis where basically they collate a lot of different publications and review them for robustness, sort of data that are the publications that have data that are more likely to be true and not confounded by different bias and other problems. And they looked at 5,365 publications. That's just an astounding task. I can't imagine doing that myself. But they found 21 publications were eligible for inclusion in their analysis, and then identified another additional publication through the review of the references, etc. Basically, in those 23 studies, there were 9,677 patients that they evaluated. They had an average follow-up time of 10 years in those papers. They looked at those particular studies, and what they found was that there was an increased risk of cancer in patients with acromegaly. They found that the overall risk of cancer was 1.5 times that of the normal population. And the cancers were basically the same types of cancers that were seen in their particular study that was done. So we have basically this wonderful epidemiological study and this meta-analysis that support an increased cancer incidence among patients with acromegaly. This fits with what I have seen as a practicing physician for about 30 years now. And this translates into the practice of medicine in that recommendations for cancer screening. Now, they change. When we first recognized the risk of colon cancer, for example, in people with acromegaly, it was thought that patients should get a colonoscopy at the time of diagnosis and then every 2 years thereafter. After that period of time, it seemed that gastroenterologists were recommending they get a colonoscopy and then wait 5 years and then wait until they're 50. And some gastroenterologists have told my patient that the data suggests that they just need to have colonoscopy according to the usual guidelines for patients who have no evidence of acromegaly, which is at age 50, then maybe in 5 years, and then, you know, hemocult stool tests. I can't keep up with the changes. I don't know what the latest recommendations are. But I usually tell people with acromegaly, it's a good idea to see a gastroenterologist, get a colonoscopy. Depending on the findings, then decide on when the next one should be performed. If there's a family history of colon cancer, you want to get those more regularly. If you have colon polyps or other findings on evaluation on the first colonoscopy, you probably want to get those done more regularly. If your study is totally negative, you might be able to relax about that. The recommendations regarding mammography for women, I think, for women who don't have acromegaly are probably reasonable enough for women who have acromegaly, but certainly at the time of diagnosis and then maybe yearly thereafter to screen for this particular disorder. Men should see their primary physicians for prostate examinations and PSA tests. And of course, seeing a primary physician for a good general checkup and assessment of your overall health is probably a good idea. Oh, by the way, one of the other cancers that was seen in this particular study that I failed to mention was thyroid cancer, but they had one patient with that, whereas the expected was 0.3 patients, so who knows what that means. But maybe us endocrinologists need to do a little bit better job of feeling the thyroid gland in our patients with acromegaly who are known to have multinodular goiter in about 10 to 20% of cases. So I find this to be very intriguing. It reminds me as a pituitary endocrinologist to pay attention to the whole patient. And, you know, while we're busy focusing on tumor and IGF-1 and growth hormone levels and how to manage those and how to manage any other hormone excesses or deficiencies, we as endocrinologists need to remember to tell patients to get mammography, prostate examinations, and colonoscopy, and you as patients need to remind us to either work with you or to work with your primary physicians, or however, to get those things done as well. And that's part of what we try to do at Pituitary World News, is to empower patients to be able to help their physicians care for themselves. All right, that's all for today. I hope that you enjoyed this podcast. Once again, please send us your comments and any ideas you have about future podcasts. This has been Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News, and I wish you all a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you for listening. Bye.